even Netanyahu himself probably didn't see coming. The man who has built his career on surviving every scandal, every political ambush, every war gone wrong, is suddenly staring down a storm that's hitting from all directions at once. We're talking about mass resignations, street protests, sit-ins, strikes, you name it, it's happening.
We are here to tell the world that we, because we are Jews, we are against the occupation of Palestine.
And at the center of it all is a leader whose grip on power is slipping faster than he can spin the narrative. On the global stage, the cracks are showing in a way that's impossible to hide. The world finally is paying attention to the Palestinian plight without the usual Israeli spin dominating the headlines. The deliberate targeting and killing of journalists, the starvation of Gaza's population, the images of emaciated children. It's breaking through the propaganda wall Netanyahu has relied on for years. Suddenly, his carefully controlled media grip is faltering and the mask is slipping. And while that's happening abroad, things at home are even worse for him.
Now the government has decided to expand the world and push deeper into Gaza. But my husband is still dead. Every vision, every bullet, every airstrike could cost him his life. This isn't just a military decision. It could be a death sentence for the people we love most.
His coalition, the very political machine that's kept him in the driver's seat, is coming apart at the seams. Allies are resigning, discontent is spilling into the open, and the families of Israeli prisoners of war are flat out refusing to be props in his political theater anymore.
President Trump, thank you for fighting for the hostages, but the truth is simple. Only an end to this war will bring them home. Please sell a deal and bring them back!
President Trump, thank you for bringing me home. But please, help us get a deal that brings everyone home now.
Even veteran soldiers and airmen, many of whom once carried out the very bombings in Gaza, are standing up and saying, enough. This isn't just about people holding signs and chanting slogans. It's an all-out social rebellion. Across Israel, massive sit-ins are underway, with labor unions poised to paralyze the country's economy in solidarity.
This year have made that very clear tonight. They're very, very concerned about their relatives there. For those that are still alive, and some are believed to be held somewhere in Gaza City, that they might be harmed or even killed by their captors if the Israeli army goes in there with the ground forces. Or that also the ones that are deceased are maybe lost forever. And we heard some very, very strong words here. You know, people here have lost trust in the government, at least some of the people here, that they will actually go for a deal. And people here fear, you know, over between 70% and 80%, according to polls of Israelis, said what they're calling for here tonight again, end the war and bring the hostages home.
Think about that, a general strike in a nation already deep in military conflict. It's the kind of thing that tells you this is no longer business as usual. And then there's Netanyahu himself, the Hague's most wanted warlord, under so much pressure that he's practically vanished from the public eye after a press statement that barely registered in the mainstream news. When a man who thrives on controlling the headlines can't even make front page news in his own country, you know the political clock is ticking.
Yes, I mean, you've had the IDF chief of staff himself openly against it. You have the security elites, the former security elites in Israel, talking about how this war is no longer achieving any goals. And you have a public who's also very concerned about, as I said, the hostages. So the takeover of Gaza City specifically for the public is a death sentence for the hostages. It's also going to cause high soldier casualties. As many military analysts have said, and I'm also saying, there's no reason to believe that more military force is going to create a different result in Gaza. And even the far-right ministers in Netanyahu's government are not happy with the idea of taking over Gaza City because it's not enough, it's too incremental, it's not going to completely erase Hamas, which is what they're demanding, which is, of course, an unreasonable demand, but nobody's really satisfied with this kind of decision, neither the public nor the people who want to resettle Gaza in the government. So you're kind of at this paralysis where Netanyahu, I think, understands he's failed. He's failed to achieve the goals since March that he put with the latest military operation, and he's stuck. So he's looking to kind of, you know, use this big rhetoric about a reoccupation to try to get things moving. That's basically where we're at.
Internationally, it's a nightmare scenario for Netanyahu. Australia, France, Canada, and the United Kingdom have all announced moves toward recognizing a Palestinian state.
Canadian government is confirming it will soon recognize a Palestinian state if certain conditions are met. Prime Minister Mark Carney making the announcement late this afternoon.
Canada intends to recognize the state of Palestine at the 80th session of the United Nations General Assembly in September 2025. This intention is predicated on the Palestinian Authority's commitment to much-needed reforms, including commitments by the Palestinian Authority's President Abbas to fundamentally reform its governance, to hold general elections in 2026, in which Hamas can play no part.
These aren't fringe countries. These are nations that Israel has long counted as allies, and they're now publicly calling time on the occupation. It's a symbolic and diplomatic humiliation rolled into one.
We cry with the people of Gaza. We come to tell the Sabut convoy congratulations, because you are not silenced. You are telling the world they dare not be silent when innocent people are being killed. Congratulations for your going. Jews around the world who are true to the Torah never accepted this occupation. We always demonstrated against Zionism and their state from the streets of Al-Quds to the streets of New York by the United Nations.
Meanwhile, inside Israel, the anger has crystallized into action. Groups representing families of hostages, fallen soldiers, and victims of the October 7th counteroffensive have called for a nationwide general strike on August 17th. Their message is clear: end this war, stop the political games, and bring the captives home before Netanyahu's planned takeover of Gaza City seals their fate. And the protests aren't just coming from the usual political opposition. In Tel Aviv and other cities, tens of thousands have gathered to demand a prisoner swap deal and a ceasefire. The families of the captives are sounding the alarm, warning that Netanyahu's Gaza City mission will all but guarantee their loved ones' deaths. Among these waves of demonstrations, a particularly powerful new force has emerged, a coalition of 500 women calling themselves Mothers on the Front. Their mission? End the war in Gaza and bring back the 50 prisoners of war, 20 of whom are believed to still be alive. Let's remember who we're talking about here. Netanyahu is a survivor. Politically speaking, the guy's been like Teflon for decades. Corruption scandals? He's faced them. Indictments? He's still in office. Mass protests? He's shrugged them off. Even wars that left Israel internationally condemned have often worked in his favor because he's been a master at flipping military aggression into political capital. He'd paint himself as Israel's protector and watch his approval ratings climb just enough to cling to power. That's been his trick over and over again. Take a crisis, militarize it, spin it into a personal crusade, and dare anyone to oppose him without looking unpatriotic. But here's the problem. This time, the crisis isn't rallying people around him. It's isolating him. The war in Gaza, which he probably thought would unify the country, has turned into the biggest wedge issue in Israel's recent history. He's managed to alienate the military, his coalition partners, the families of prisoners of war, and large swathes of the Israeli public all at once. That's unprecedented. Usually, even when the public is divided, he can count on the IDF and his political allies to hold the line. Not this time. When your own chief of staff is warning against your strategy and dozens of officers are refusing to deploy, you're not just dealing with bad optics. You're dealing with a military establishment that's no longer willing to blindly execute your political ambitions. That's a crack in the very foundation of Israeli politics.